This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a fictional drama, questioning how an assassinated civil rights icon spent his last night, an art auction with a focus on health, a road trip to a North Shore art festival, or conversation with the new president of the Arts Council of New Orleans, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Mountaintop by playwright Katori Hall, winner of the 2010 Olivier Award for Best New Play, continues to create buzz and controversy as it makes its Southern Regional premiere at the Anthony Bean Community Theater. The Mountaintop is a reimagining of Martin Luther King's final night before his assassination in Memphis in 1968. And joining me to talk about this fictional depiction of Dr. King's last night are Anthony Bean, who portrays King, and director Harold Evans. Welcome to Inside the Arts. Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
We see a very different side of Dr. King in this drama.
Oh, yes.
Let's begin with you, Harold. How do you tell this more human, less iconic side of the civil rights leader's personality?
The story is out of the head of Katori Hall.
She is the second African-American woman to actually have a play successfully done on Broadway. The first one was, and I hate to say, 50 years ago, with Lorraine Hansberry, when she produced A Raisin in the Sun.
It could have been out of maybe anybody else's head if they wanted to imagine what Dr. King would have been doing immediately after making that I Have a Dream speech. But he's seen in this play as a very human individual, like most of us, concerned about family, concerned about the work he's been doing and wanting to continue doing. We see somebody who is struggling with death threats, separation from his family, the kinds of things that would have most people maybe perspiring a bit and being uncomfortable and rather anxious. But he's still the smooth Dr. King that we know from his public persona.
So, Anthony, tell me the story. You're in room 306 of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. It's 1968.
Just leaving the church, Masonic Temple, just letting the world know that he's been to the mountaintop. It doesn't matter now. He senses death. I had to dig underneath the man. The dialogue lends itself to that. So we pull back the cover and we see the man and all of his fears and also his love and his desires. You see all of this, and sometime in one monologue. It's a beautiful piece of work. When I first read it, I did not want to read it because I heard the controversy.
Which was what?
Well, it was rumored, which started off the protest in New York when it was on Broadway, that Dr. King was locked in a room with a woman after leaving the Masonic Temple the day before he was killed. And I didn't want to read that. In fact, I dismissed it and said, just another whatever. And I was convinced to read it just a few weeks ago. Once I read the first two pages, I was compelled to read the rest of the story. And not only was I compelled to read, I kept seeing me playing the role. So that's how much it moved me. And I said, oh, my God, we got to do this play. A lot of people who were protesting this play really never saw the play before the protest or read the story. Otherwise, it would have been a change of action for them because it's a beautiful story and it have all of us thinking about that day when we have to meet our master or when we have to do that crossroad in life. And we all have to do that.
Who is the woman?
She is a maid in the show. But as the play progresses, you realize that there's more to this maid. She has a higher calling.
So there are only two actors in this
movie? Only two actors. But I tell you, the subject matter and who they deal with and what they deal with, and it talks about us as humans and life and love and hate and desires and lust. A lot of humor in this show.
Why would you say that it's important that we see this more human side of Dr. King?
It's important to know that you don't have to be Superman to take a stand. You don't have to be some kind of superhero. You can be your ordinary self just taking a stand and seeing this man who, if anyone had inquired about him just from what we see in this motel room, we'd never think that he was a man out there risking his life, being attacked by dogs, beaten by cops, and all of that. He was just a regular human being who just happened, maybe like a lot of heroes, they're reluctant. They don't really want to incur all of that wrath, but because of the stand they take, this is what they draw to themselves.
And at the end, without giving away anything, he sees the future. He's taken to the mountaintop.
What does he see?
He sees what we're experiencing today.
And all its beauty and its ugliness. You can see young males and young blacks who graduated. You see interracial marriages. You see a lot of improvement. But you also see the crime and the sagging, the young black boy sagging. And it just makes you wonder, what would Dr. King say today? Well, he looks at that.
What is it that you want people to think about most after this experience?
Well, not only to appreciate Dr. King himself, but appreciate life, your own life, knowing that you too will be at the crossroads someday. And just to have Dr. King, a very famous man, to see that he's just human just like you. So perhaps you yourself need to reach out and just be a little nicer to people. Know that we all are in this together.
Anthony Bean and Harold Evans, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
The Mountaintop by award-winning playwright Katori Hall, directed by Harold Evans and starring Anthony Bean as Dr. King, runs November 1st through 24th at the Anthony Bean Community Theater, 1333 South Carrollton Avenue. More info at anthonybeantheater.com. This production is intended for mature audiences due to subject matter, language, and special effects. Art Docs, a unique program that strives to keep local artists healthy, will soon get a financial shot in the arm as it kicks off its 8th annual art auction. Art Docs, which stands for Artist Receiving Treatment, Doctors Offering Crucial Services, provides health care to our city's visual and performing artists, writers, and musicians who are uninsured and have limited finances. It is the brainchild of artist and gallery owner Jonathan Ferrara and Dr. Vincent Morelli. And joining me today to talk about the auction and health care needs for artists is Jonathan Ferrara. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure, Diane. Always a pleasure to be here.
This program, Art Docs, is the first in the country to offer a place for artists to turn to for healthcare needs. Tell me, how did it come about?
Well, it started in 1999, actually, when I was having an exhibition with the artist Roy Ferdinand, who's a well-known outsider artist who passed away a number of years ago. And he had told me a story about how he had to have 75% of his stomach removed because he had cancer. And I thought to myself, this really doesn't make any sense. I said, this guy doesn't have health insurance. There, you know, we need to take care of our artists. And another artist, Frenchie, who is a well-known painter, came and he had put his painting hand through a glass window and cut it and needed to see a doctor, and he didn't have any health insurance. So at that time, I kind of partnered with Dr. Morelli. We said, we really need to find a place where artists can turn to so we can take care of their health care needs if they don't have health insurance. And in 1999, Dr. Morelli then ran the residency program at Kenner Regional Medical Center. And so he had residents, we had artist patients, we said, well, residents need to see patients, so let's combine those two things together. And ArtDocs was born. And 14 years later, it's still in existence, and we're still seeing patients. We're still providing healthcare services and still helping artists access the healthcare system as well.
How exactly does it work?
Right now, you can go to the website, which is www.artdocs.com. You'll talk to a woman named Amanda Vincent. She will find out what the issue that you're currently dealing with is and then help you to place you within our programs. Usually we work with Daughters of Charity to provide dental services, general physician visits, and also counseling services are provided through Family Service of Greater New Orleans. So we kind of act as the conduit to provide healthcare services to the artists of our community.
And the upcoming art auction is one avenue for keeping the program alive. Tell us what's on tap.
The art auction has taken many shapes and many forms over the years. And this year, it's going to be held at the Art Club, which is a really fantastic place. It's on 519 Elysian Fields. It's owned by the renowned painter James Michelopoulos. And it's a former funeral home that's been transformed by the group Artist Inc. into this kind of funky art club. What you have is artists donating works to raise money to help other artists. We've got some of the top contemporary artists in the city, artists like Douglas Bourgeois, Blake Boyd, Teresa Cole, Skylar Fine, Dan Taig, Michael Pahone, Sibylla Peretti, Bob Tannen, Charlie Varley, Elizabeth Shannon. The list goes on and on, but you've got paintings, you've got some sculpture, you've got prints, a variety of different media, and we try to create an electric environment. Our auctioneer, Adam Marcus, stirs the pot and gets everybody very excited. There'll be a DJ. There'll be cocktails. Everybody's coming together to support our artists and to help them take care of themselves and to keep them healthy.
Where can we go to get a sneak peek of the items that will be up for bid?
All of the works that are in the ArtDocs Benefit Art Auction will be hosted online at www.jonathanferraragallery.com, and that will be up on November the 2nd, so you can preview all of the works that are in the art auction and get ready to make your selections.
Jonathan Ferrara, artist, gallery owner, and co-founder of ArtDocs. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, Diane. Thank you.
Save the date, November 7th. That's when the 8th Annual ArtDocs Art Auction will take place at the Art Club, 519 Elysian Fields Avenue. The live auction begins at 7:30 p.m. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Are you in the mood for a road trip? Well, the Three Rivers Art Festival kicks off next weekend. For 17 years, it's been a highlight of the Covington cultural calendar. Reporter George Bonnet, who produces WWNO's North Shore Focus, has more on the history of the event.
In the 1990s, several North Shore organizations banded together to create a new festival focusing on the arts. What they started, the Three Rivers Art Festival, is now in its 17th year. Diane Winston is the festival's chairman.
We started out with a couple of dozen booths, perhaps, a lot of local artists, including the New Orleans area. And now we have 400 people applied, artists applied, for only 200 spots of this juried art show. And I would estimate this year perhaps we have 20 to 25 states represented. We have them from Maine to the Pacific Northwest, from Florida to California.
Most festivals in Louisiana have an art tent. At Three Rivers, the art takes center stage.
While we do have music and all manner of things related to arts and humanities, it is about the arts and humanities. We want this clearly to be identified as an arts festival. We support the artists. We do a lot with the student and children's area that just isn't exposing them to performance and other art kind of venues, but actually has them interact.
Diane says the North Shore was a natural home for this festival because of the diversity of talent already living here.
We have songwriters and musicians and jewelry making and woodworkers all over the North Shore. And we have. That's been our history. We didn't have to manufacture an arts community. It existed. And now we're one of the best festivals in Louisiana. Some would say the region.
Jamie Owens is a local artist who was selected to create the piece for this year's festival poster. Jamie studied art and graphic design in school, but economic necessity drove him to open a sign shop. It was in his shop one day, playing with vinyl scraps, that Jamie stumbled upon his signature style.
My medium is unique, for one. You know, I don't know anybody else sitting there with a razor blade cutting up scrap pieces of vinyl and sticking them on. I weave in reflective film, which is on fire trucks and police cars and ambulances. So I call it art in two great lights, because you can look at it normal and it looks one way, but when you hold it with a light about eye level, certain elements glow just like it would if you pulled up on a police car at night.
When Jamie sought inspiration for the poster, he didn't have to look beyond one of the local merchants on Columbia Street, the main Covington roadway occupied by the festival.
The event poster has a lot of symbolic things. I really did a lot of research and I found out a lot of historical things about Covington that I haven't known. And everything in there has meaning as far as what's going on in the actual artwork. It's I call it encompassing silhouettes. It's basically a group of people in Covington kind of protecting over H.J. Smith & Sons Museum, which was one of the last buildings standing in a historical fire in the past. They had a guy, several firefighters get between the burning building and the museum and held up tin to deflect the heat to be able to fight the fire. So I thought it was important to show, you know, one of the last remaining original businesses in Covington and put my modern colorful spin on it with my vinyl work.
Jamie is still a relative newcomer as professional artists go. As such, he recognizes the tremendous value of being an exhibitor at the Three Rivers Art Festival.
If you love art and you love to create it, I would say give it a shot. It can never hurt to just get out and expose your art to the world, because you never know what's going to happen.
The Three Rivers Art Festival will be held during the day on November 9th and 10th this year in downtown Covington, and admission is free. For WWNO, I'm George Bonnet.
The North Shore Focus on WWNO is made possible with support from the North Shore Community Foundation. Voices on the Arts is a partnership with NOLA V and WWNO, featuring eight new leaders of the city's foremost cultural organizations. New Orleans arts institutions have perhaps never gone through this kind of major change all at once. We're hearing from these new executives on what they bring to New Orleans, how they are embracing our culture, and their plans for the future. Today, Kim Cook. She's the new president of the Arts Council of New Orleans.
My name is Kim Cook, and I'm the president of the Arts Council of New Orleans. I arrived May 1st of 2013. Most recently, I came from Los Angeles. I'm originally from San Francisco, but I did spend a great deal of time on the East Coast, including coming to New Orleans for a major project in 2010, where I met so many incredible people, truly like characters out of a book, I have to say. And I thought this magical city and these wonderful people could be just so incredible to engage with. So the way that I've conceptualized the Arts Council is in three areas: people, place, and artists. For me, people is where those who are not professionals express or experience art. It's where we're inspired. And it is my fundamental belief that creative expression is embedded in being human. And I also believe firmly that we're all in the act of creating our own lives. That's a narrative. That's a creative process. When we're talking about place, the long version of that would be civic design and urban aesthetics. So it's about design solutions for community problems and not solely about things to do with sculpture or painting. So street signs, as a newcomer, even when you're using your GPS on your phone and it says turn left at Orleans and you're going down Broad Street and there's no sign, I don't know for sure if I'm in the right place. So I'm not saying that the Arts Council is going to run around and plant street signs. I'm simply saying that art can also be about design solutions in the community. Artists, as I look across New Orleans at the artists and arts organizations and art service organizations, I see a proliferation of good ideas without enough alignment and investment to create necessarily critical mass. So I worry about the underinvestment and the overextension of what is essentially, I think, a fairly fragile arts community, even though it's incredibly robust. One of the things I've been saying in the last couple of weeks is that I want to be willing to be audacious without being arrogant. For me, it's important that people know that I feel a great sense of gratitude for the opportunity to work in New Orleans, that I don't take anything for granted, and I don't assume that the things that I imagine haven't been imagined by others. There is no way that I, as a newcomer to this city, can effect change in isolation. The people here have a will to survive. They have a will to work. They have a will to communicate with each other, to collaborate, to make a contribution. And they have a certain degree of maybe a little bit of negativity around the edges. So I think that's where some of us who are newcomers, even though we will never be New Orleans natives, can work with those that are here to reimagine a future for New Orleans that's as vibrant as its past, that respects the legacy of the community, builds on that, and also brings in fresh energy, fresh innovation, and joins in with the people who live here in the spirit of hope and planning for the future.
To learn more about Kim Cook's plans for the Arts Council of New Orleans, go to WWNO.org or NOLAV.com. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.